In 1956, Congress set up the Alaska Mental Health Trust to make sure the state could provide mental health care programs to its residents far into the future. Since then, the trust has had a tumultuous history, and some state leaders fear it could be in danger once more. Legislators are considering a special audit of the trust and how the trustees are investing its money. Alaska Public Media's Ann Hillman has the story.
William Foster stands in Bean's Cafe, sifting through a pile of ceramic ornaments he helped design, then pulls one out of his pocket. It's an image of a raven. Foster, who's homeless, says he carries it with him everywhere because it reminds him of his late mother. He's participating in the Healing Faces Project, a program that focuses on art and healing circles that's funded in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
It calms us down, relaxes us, gives us our mind up on a lot of stuff.
The project is just one of hundreds made possible by the trust. Programs range from job training for young people with disabilities to detox centers to criminal justice reform. There are tens of thousands of people who rely on trust funds. And now, some of the people involved in creating the public corporation think it may be at risk. Alaska statute says the Mental Health Trust Fund shall be managed by the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Philip Voland, one of the lawyers who helped create the trust, says that law is really straightforward.
That's where you put the money. It's just, that's what it says. It says all the money goes there.
But since October of 2008, that's not where the money has gone. For 8 years, members of the Board of Trustees have voted to suspend transfers of the principal to the permanent fund. And instead, they're investing it themselves. Voland says that's exactly what he and other state leaders were trying to prevent. The Mental Health Trust has a complicated history. When it was first established in 1956 by Congress, 1 million acres of land in Alaska were set aside to be used by the state's legislature to fund a comprehensive mental health care system. But by 1982, most of that land trust was whittled away, given to municipalities and individuals, and little money was being spent on mental health. So a group of people sued the state. Voland represented one of the plaintiffs.
The original rulings by the state superior court declared that the state had mismanaged and destroyed the trust effectively and would have to go about reestablishing it.
It took more than a decade for the plaintiffs and the state to agree on how to do that. Voland says the plaintiffs wanted two main things.
Sufficient funds to provide for mental health programs, but who also wanted all kinds of assurances to make sure that there would not be another dissipation of the trust in the future.
In the end, the state reconstituted the original 1 million acres with mostly new land and added $200 million to reestablish the trust. They installed a board of trustees to oversee it. The cash was invested by the Permanent Fund Corporation. The land was managed by the Trust Land Office at the Department of Natural Resources. Money generated by the investments and the land went into two different pots, some to be used for mental health programs, the rest to be added to the principal and reinvested by the permanent fund. Voland says splitting the responsibilities was intentional.
To prevent any sort of rogue action by trustees, it was just a what I would say was a prophylactic measure.
During the past 8 years, instead of sending the money to the permanent fund for management, the trustees have voted to invest it all themselves. That includes buying $39 million worth of real estate. For example, they spent $17 million on an office building in Washington State in 2014 and $9 million on property in Texas this past summer. The board is also spending $2 million to try to develop a mine at Icy Cape in southeast Alaska. Greg Jones is the new CEO of the Mental Health Trust Authority and used to run the Trust Land Office. He says the Trust Land Office is more nimble than the permanent fund and can bring in more money for the trust.
We believe that we can add to what the permanent fund does and diversify and perhaps add a little more with a very carefully managed real estate program.
Jones says the way the trust is laid out, revenues from things like mineral sales go to the principal, but rent money That all goes towards programs that help people.
What we've done with the real estate program is create an investment that pays income, that pays millions of dollars in income, that goes straight to program.
Jones and board chair Russ Webb both say they are legally allowed to use the principal to buy land and invest it as they choose. However, they would not provide copies of written legal counsel explaining their authority, could not cite specific statutes or regulations, and would not allow their attorney to speak on the matter. Boland is not the only person concerned about the legality of the trust's investments. Bruce Botello was the attorney general back in 1994 and was sitting on the opposite side of the table from Boland, looking up for the state's interests. Botello says they purposely separated the trust's money management from their land management, in part because the permanent fund was already managing money and doing it well.
And we saw a little reason to duplicate that effort.
Botello says he's not commenting on how well the trust is managing its assets. That's not the point.
We saw a check and balance in trying to separate those functions out. And to me, that is the underlying concern.
Botello, Voland, and others want a special legislative audit of the trust authority, the land office, and the board of trustees. They say it's up to the legislature to decide if the board's actions are legal. Representative Mike Hawker is requesting the audit, and the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee will make a decision at its December 13th meeting. If lawmakers act, auditors will look into everything from the legality of the trust's financial management to potential Open Meetings Act violations. From the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.